This is Carol Foster of 2 Timothy 2:15 Resources, and I am so excited that you're going to join me today as we study God's Word. The response new Messianic believers give when asked why they initially visited a Messianic congregation is, "We knew there had to be more." As we study together, we will begin to see that yes, indeed, there has to be more. For additional study aids to assist you in studying along with us, go to our website, sectim.org. As we concluded our last session together, we had just discussed the three sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. We discovered that Noah's descendants through Shem's lineage dominated the period after the flood in the writings of the author of Bereshit. We also discovered, as listed in the genealogy of Bereshit, chapter 12, that Shem is the ancestor of the Hebrews through his son Eber, and Eber appears in the lineage of Abraham. We also found that in the lineage of Ham, through his son Canaan, there were many descendants who fathered nations that were enemies of the nation of Israel. Among these nations were the Canaanites, the Philistines, and the Amorites, just to mention a few. Japheth, Noah's youngest son, is only mentioned in relation to the genealogies and in the account of Noah's nakedness and the sin of Ham. However, we do read in Bereshit chapter 9, verses 26 and 27, that he received a specific blessing given by Noah. And it states, "He also said, 'Blessed be the Lord, the God of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant. May God enlarge Japheth, and let him dwell in the tents of Shem, and let Canaan be his servant.'" We'll be covering this subject more in detail when we get to chapter 9. As we continue to chapter 6, I want to let you know that these verses have been a matter of many different thoughts, theories, and suppositions for centuries. We are not going to answer all of the questions here, but we are going to do a brief study on what the Word says. Bereshit chapter 6, verses 1 through 8, tells us about the perversion that filled the earth during the time of Noah. Let me read these verses so that we can remain in context as we study. "Now it came about, when men began to multiply on the face of the land, and the daughters were born to them, and the sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves, whomever they chose. Then the Lord said, 'My spirit will not strive with man forever, because he also is flesh. Nevertheless, his days shall be 120 years. The Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Those were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and that every intent of the thought of his heart was only evil continually. The Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. The Lord said, 'I will blot out men whom I have created from the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to birds for the sky, for I am sorry that I have made them.' But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord." The sons of God, mentioned in verse 2, have been identified in three different ways. First, as Seth's apostate descendants, who intermarried with the depraved descendants of Cain. Second, as fallen angels who took on physical bodies to cohabit with women of the human race. And thirdly, as tyrannical chieftains of descendants of Cain who married a plurality of wives in order to expand their dominion. Although each of the three views has its problems, those of the angel view can be most satisfactorily resolved. The expression "sons of God" is used exclusively in the Tanakh of angels, as we read in Job chapter 1, verse 6, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them." And then in Job chapter 2, verse 1, "Again there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them to present himself before the Lord." And in Job 38, verse 7, "When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy." According to this view, the Nephilim, and now this is from a Hebrew word meaning to fall, were the monstrous offspring of those unnatural unions. You can read another account of a different sort with the Nephilim in Bamidbar, or Numbers, chapter 13, verses 33. Although they were big, they were not stronger than God, who blotted them out in the flood, as we found in Bereshit, chapter 6, verse 7, and chapter 7, verse 23, along with the rest of the world. An in-depth study of the subject of the Nephilim would take much more time than we have for this study. Remember, this is an overview of the Tanakh, and I don't want to get bogged down in any one particular subject area. However, this topic might make a wonderful personal study, or maybe a future study here on There Has to Be More. However, we do see a question arise from these verses in Bereshit chapter 6. Evil mortals were striving with Jehovah. These were violent, lawless men. Yet at the same time, their lives were sustained by Jehovah alone. Why did he allow such enemies to continue to exist? In answer, noting that the meaning of the name Israel is the one who strives with God, the Hebrew word translated here as God is Elohim, or the divine presence. Even Israel, or Yaakov, and the Israelites, Jehovah's chosen people, often questioned his will. If Jehovah destroyed all those who resisted his will, all people would soon be destroyed, as there were in the flood. In contrast, Noah was one man who followed Jehovah's will totally. Let's take a closer look at Noah in the context of this evil society, as found in Bereshit chapter 6, verses 5 through 12. The Hebrew root for the name Noah is Nuach, and it's the same root that we see translated into English as both the words comfort and grieved. Both Jehovah and humanity shared in the pain caused by sin. Both also shared in the pain of what their hands had labored over, and each in their own way would share in the comfort brought by Jehovah's redemption. It's interesting to compare chapter 6, verse 6, with chapter 5, verses 28 and 29. Both verses use the same two Hebrew root words in a similar order. Let's read these verses. I'm going to read them from the New International Version, as I think this will give us a better understanding. Chapter 5, verses 28 and 29 state, "Then Lamech had lived 182 years. He had a son. He named him Noah, and said, 'He will comfort us in the labor and painful toil of our hands caused by the ground the Lord has cursed.'" And then in chapter 6, verse 6, "The Lord has grieved that he had made man on earth, and his heart was filled with pain." As we have discovered, the words used in these verses, comfort in chapter 5, verse 29, and grieved in chapter 6, verse 6, come from the same Hebrew root, nuach. It is also interesting to note that labor, used in chapter 5, verse 29, and made, used in chapter 6, verse 6, are also related by the same root word. Although Jehovah is perfect, he can still experience genuine sorrow over what he has created. He can grieve over his creation just as he can rejoice over it, as we previously read in chapter 1. In the same manner, his perfect son could also experience genuine sorrow over the lost condition of his world, as we read in Matthew, or Matthew, chapter 23, verse 37. "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her? How often I have wanted to gather your children together, the way a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, and you were unwilling." Both Jehovah's love and his hatred of sin form the indispensable foundation of his plans for redemption through the incarnation of Messiah. In verses 6 through 13 of chapter 6, we find that while Jehovah was grieved with mankind in general, there was one man, Noah, who pleased him. Therefore, Jehovah told Noah to make an ark to save him from the coming flood and destruction. Although the ark was more of a barge than a ship, it was 450 feet long, 75 feet broad, and 45 feet high, giving it a capacity of 1,400,000 cubic feet. as many as 522 modern railroad boxcars could have fit inside. It would have only required 150 boxcars to house two of every breathing creature, including animals now living and those that are now extinct. The covenant that Jehovah had promised he would make with Noah would provide not only for the redemption and the survival of the creatures of Jehovah's creation, but also, as we read in Bereshit chapter 6, verse 18, it would provide for the redemption and survival of Noah and his family as well. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. This was such a contrast with everything else on earth that would perish in the flood. Basically, Jehovah told Noah, "But I solemnly swear to keep you safe in the boat." This statement was related to Noah's assurance of salvation from the flood, as we read in Bereshit chapter 9, verses 16 and 17. "When the bow is in the cloud, then I will look upon it, to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. And God said to Noah, 'This is the sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is on the earth.'" We'll study this more in depth a little later. Was the flood universal or local? Indications for a universal flood include 1. The depth of the water, as we read in chapter 7, verses 19 and 20. "The water prevailed more and more upon the earth, so that all the high mountains everywhere under the heavens were covered. The water prevailed 15 cubits high, and the mountains were covered." Secondly, the death of all flesh. We see this in verses 21 and 22. "All flesh that moved on the earth perished, birds and cattle and beasts, and every swarming thing that swarms upon the earth, and all mankind. Of all that was on the dry land, all in whose nostrils was the breath of the spirit of life died." And thirdly, therefore, the need for the ark. Had the flood been only a local one, Jehovah could have directed Noah, his family, and the animals to migrate to a safe place. The phrase, "every kind of breathing animal," refers back to the event of creation recorded in Bereshit chapter 1. There is repeated emphasis on the flood, or the waters, and on the earth in chapter 7, verses 17 through 20. "Then the flood came upon the earth for 40 days, and the water increased and lifted up the ark, so that it rose above the earth. The water prevailed and increased greatly upon the earth, and the ark floated on the surface of the water. The water prevailed more and more upon the earth, so that all the high mountains everywhere under the heavens were covered. The water prevailed 15 cubits higher, and the mountains were covered." The water moved progressively higher. The ark was lifted up above the ground. The water greatly increased. All mountains under the heavens were covered. And finally, the water was 22 feet higher than the mountaintops. Every living thing was wiped out, as we read in verse 23. "Thus he blotted out every living thing that was upon the face of the land, from man to animals to creeping things and to birds of the sky, and they were blotted out from the earth. And only Noah was left, together with those that were with him in the ark." This was exactly what Jehovah had said he would do. All that had the breath of life, man, cattle, beasts, and swarming things, died. This portrays the unraveling of the act of creation as recounted in Genesis chapter 1. The rain continued for 40 days. The ark rested on Ararat after 150 days, and all the waters did not recede for a year and 10 days from the day that they had entered the ark. The telling of the flood in chapter 7, verses 1 through 24, and the destruction of all living things upon the earth, with the exception of Noah, his family, and the creatures that Jehovah brought into the ark, completes our second major topic in the book of Bereshit, which was Jehovah's curse on the violation of his creation. We now move on to the last major topic in Bereshit, Jehovah's covenant for a new creation. This major topic covers the remainder of the book. There are four subtopics that we are going to explore. The first being Jehovah's covenant through a new people, as found in chapters 8, verse 1 through chapter 11, verse 32. We read in verse 1 of chapter 8 that after the world had been flooded for 150 days, Jehovah remembered Noah. Let's read this verse. But God remembered Noah and all the beasts and all the cattle that were with him in the ark. And God caused a wind to pass over the earth, and the water subsided. The first thing that we should notice is the phrase, but God remembered. This phrase contrasts the destruction brought by the Lord and the deliverance of Noah and the ark's occupants that will ensue. The word remembered is translated from the original Hebrew word zakar. The meaning of this word in the expression, but God remembered, does not mean calling to mind. It's a covenant language word, and it's designated covenant fidelity. Elohim acting in accordance with his earlier promise to Noah, as we read in chapter 6, verse 18. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. This same conceptual use of the word but is expressed in the Noah covenant, where Adonai commits to carrying out his promises and then establishes the covenant sign of the rainbow. The final word in the phrase, but God remembered, is remembered. Remembered often is found in the circumstances of deliverance. Based on Jehovah's prior covenant commitments, as in Israel's exodus and occupation of Canaan, it describes Adonai's response to the requests of his people, as when he delivers Lot from the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah on account of Abraham's mediation, and when he responds to barren Rachel, who gives birth to Yosef. Divine remembrance was the appeal of Moshe's intervention on behalf of the backslidden Israel, and it was the reason for Jehovah's return to a contrite people, as we read in Vayikra, or Leviticus, chapter 26, verse 42. Then I will remember my covenant with Jacob, and I will remember also my covenant with Isaac, and my covenant with Abraham as well, and I will remember the land. And then again, in the same chapter, verse 45, but I will remember for them the covenant with their ancestors, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt in the sight of the nations, that I might be their God. I am the Lord. The word remembered is one of the great words for expressing redemption and salvation in the Tanakh. We see an example of this in Shemot, or Exodus, chapter 2, verses 24 and 25. When Jehovah heard the cries of his people Israel, who were in captivity in Egypt, and he remembered them. Although the flood story ends with chapter 8, verse 22, there is a spiritual as well as physical defining point in this first verse, where the reader is reminded again, but God remembered Noah. In Scripture, when something is said about Jehovah's remembering, this signals a major act of redemption for the ones he has remembered. This can be understood in reference to Jehovah hearing the cries of his people Israel. When they were held captive in Egypt, Jehovah remembered them and sent Moshe to redeem them out of their bondage. Jehovah's remembering of Noah explicitly begins his major design for bringing about worldwide redemption. The record of that design stretches from Bereshit chapter 8 through Bereshit chapter 50. Remember also speaks of the future as well as the past and the present, for the psalmist declares that for the sake of the covenant, Adonai will bring about a future blessing on his people, as we read in Tehillim, or Psalms 115, verse 12. People of the covenant, whether yesterday or today, are expected to exercise covenant allegiance by remembering Adonai. The God of Israel had remembered Noah, and by this Israel was and still is encouraged to remember the Lord of Sinai and his eternal covenant of promise and redemption for them. In some ways, the flood returned the earth to a condition that was similar to its state at the beginning of Elohim's creation. Although the earth still retained its basic form and probably had not changed drastically under the floodwaters, water covered the earth as it did in the beginning. Also, it was again empty of people and animal life, except for the handful of people and animals that were aboard the ark. We find that after Bereshit chapter 8, verse 13, time began to be reckoned by Noah's age. Now it came about in the 601st year, in the first month, on the first of the month, the water was dried up from the earth. Then Noah, removing the cover of the ark, and looked, and behold, the surface of the ground was dried up. We see that he was the head of a new race and a father of a new beginning of history. He, like Adam, was commanded to be fruitful and multiply. Jehovah's covenant with Noah was foundational for his grace, seen later in the cross. In the flood, Jehovah displayed his hatred and vengeance towards sin. In the rainbow, he showed that man's deserved punishment for his acts of sin would not be immediately fulfilled. He also revealed that his hatred of sin would not be expressed until his plan of grace was completed. How then could God stand to face mankind's continued sin? The answer lies in his character. Though Jehovah is holy and just, he is also long-suffering. He is always more interested in salvation than in damnation. Again, just three words, but God remembered, explain the reversal in the flow of the waters, and thus the flow of the narrative. As a reminder, we discovered earlier that the phrase, but God, contrasts the destruction brought by the Lord and the deliverance of Noah with the ark's occupants that will ensue. As the Lord had promised, the floodwater cessation and recession begin. But only because Jehovah, who took the initiative to save the eight souls in the ark, this is referred to in 1 Kefa, or 1 Peter, chapter 3, verse 20, as Elohim displaying patience as he waits for the completion of the ark. Here the original Hebrew uses the word Elohim, which is identifying the characteristic of God as the Creator. When the patience of Elohim kept waiting in the days of Noah, during the construction of the ark, in which a few, that is, eight persons, were brought safely through the water. The receding waters became a testimony to Elohim's faithfulness to Noah and all the animals in the ark. Is it any surprise that Noah quickly offered up an offering of thanksgiving to his Elohim after he disembarked from the ark? Let's read this, verse 20. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took of every clean animal and of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. Elohim's mercy is extended to all that he has made, including the animals. If Adonai had pity on the least of these dumb creatures, we are told in Yaakov, or James, chapter 3, verse 9, that we dare not withhold mercy toward humanity made in his likeness. The story of Noah's offspring recounts a curse placed on Ham through his son Canaan. This curse would be very important for the Israelites, who were in the wilderness, about to enter the promised land, where they would run up against the Canaanites. The sin of Ham was disrespect toward his father Noah. The curse of Ham's son, Canaan, was actually a curse on all of Ham's descendants. Thus, the curse on Canaan was not specifically directed against the man, Canaan himself, but against the Canaanite people in general. Ham's sin was his frivolous look upon his naked father, an act in which he abandoned Jehovah's moral code. Canaan's descendants acted as their ancestor had, with moral abandon. The curse on Canaan was fulfilled in the destruction and the conquest of the land by the Israelites, led by Joshua. In our next time together, we'll continue our study of Noah's offspring. Join us then. Thank you for joining us today as we delved into the beautiful truths of God's Word to indeed discover that there has to be more. I pray that the Word applied to your daily life will bring a deeper understanding of His love letter written just to you. Let me remind you that we have additional study aids to assist you with our studies together on our website. It's sectim.org. May this day fill you with the love of God, joy, and shalom. Nothing missing, nothing broken in your life.